This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Early in the 20th century, the story of serial killer Alfred Knapp, known as Knapp the Strangler, caught the attention of people across the country. Despite spending much of his life behind bars, he still managed to kill five young women, including three in Cincinnati, and his third wife in Hamilton. Now imagine if you discovered that one of your family members was almost one of Knapp's victims. That's what happened to Rick Kennedy, who writes about his grandmother's harrowing escape from Knapp in this month's Cincinnati Magazine. The article is The Devil She Knew. And Rick, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rick, this is just a bizarre thing, isn't it, to find out about a family member going through something like this. Did she ever talk about this encounter when you were younger?
Well, that was the odd thing. In 1963, she told my brother and I, who were playing in an alley in Springfield, to come in because bad men live in the alley. So she told us this story about a kidnapper who stabbed her on the head, and then when she was bleeding profusely, this scared the kidnapper, and she got away. And the family then went back to the site following the blood where they found her unconscious sister. My grandmother at the time was six. She even showed us the scar on her head. So this is 50 years ago, and my brother and I, young kids, just assumed the whole family knew this story, including my grandmother's own four children, and my father, of course, being the oldest of her children. And this past winter, my sister and I had planned a trip to Hamilton because my sister's the family genealogist for our family. And I made a passing comment that maybe we'll find the alley where Grandma was stabbed, and nobody in the family knew what I was talking about. She had never told her own children. She probably had never told her husband. But she told, I'm from a family of seven kids. None of them knew except my brother Charlie and I.
So you had assumed that this really wild story had to be common knowledge in the whole family.
I just assumed it, absolutely. And they looked at me like I had two heads.
Yeah,
just amazing.
Well, you're saying that the story fell by the wayside, sort of faded from your memory, and then when your sister and you made the trip to Hamilton, that's what started to bring all this back out again.
Well, I did a little search on the internet with, you know, with Google, everything's there, and I put in her name, I put in her father. Her father was a butcher in Hamilton. Just put some keywords in Google, and these little tiny news briefs from 1902 showed up where she had been assaulted by someone in the alley. And so from there, I was able to go to Hamilton to the library and begin. My sister and I did the search on all the daily newspapers, and she was the banner headline for days. And, of course, there were many tragedies, layers of tragedies with this because she accused the wrong man. And there was a trial in which she accused a friend of the family of doing this. She was only six. It happened at night in an alley. And while this was all occurring, at the same time, there's this character named Alfred Knapp had been arrested in Hamilton for murdering his third wife, and then he had confessed to four other murders. So right in the middle of my grandmother's trial is this new character on the scene who's making national news because he was the Jack the Ripper of the United States. He'd killed three women in Cincinnati, he killed one in Indianapolis, and then killed his third wife in Hamilton. And so this happened the same time. He even testified in my grandmother's trial, because he was in the jail with the same guy accused. He was a big braggart. And they tried to link him to the murder, and of course he was never accused. And then hours before Alfred Knapp was electrocuted at the Ohio Penitentiary in Columbus, he sat down and wrote a confession that he also had tried to kill my grandmother and her sister. So just hours before he dies, he owns up to the attack on my grandmother, who of course had lived for 2 years knowing she had falsely accused the wrong man who was acquitted. Can you imagine that embarrassment on the family? Mm. And then, of course, 3 months after Alfred Knapp was electrocuted, my grandmother's mother at age 35 died, leaving seven kids behind. So there was layers of tragedy to this story, and my grandmother kept this to herself.
Was your grandmother's family ever able to fix the relationship with the Roth family?
That was really sad. After the accuser was Joseph Roth, and he was acquitted, and after Alfred Knapp was electrocuted, they had to actually do public damage control in the paper, in which they apologized for picking the wrong guy, admitting that they felt that he was probably not the actual assailant, And there's no indication that that family was, the family was never the same anyway, and there was never any relationship resumed with the guy they accused.
Tell me more about Alfred Knapp. Pretty sinister character, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is right out of a horror story. He grew up in Indiana, rural Indiana, claimed that he was kicked in the head by a horse, which may have led to some of his problems. We'll never know. One of those kind of guys, he was a drifter between Indiana and Ohio, spent half of his youth in jail. But in the 1890s, turns up in Cincinnati. In fact, we're sitting here at the WCE parking lot. He lived like three blocks from here in the 1890s as a laborer, and he killed three women in Cincinnati. He killed a young five-year-old girl on Guest Street in 1894. Then he kills a former girlfriend on Walnut Street, across from the YMCA building, because this former girlfriend was going to rat on him because he was cheating on his wife. Then he kills his second wife, Jenny Knapp, under the canal bridge at Liberty Street. Again, we're talking two blocks from where we're talking. That's when Central Avenue through here was a part of a canal. And so he killed her and threw her into the canal. His third wife, Hannah Knapp, actually was party to one of his murders, and they moved to Hamilton, Ohio in 1902. And of course, with her, he always strangled all of them, and of course he detailed it with great bravado in the media. He strangles her, wraps up her body in a box. He goes to a local carriage house in Hamilton, takes it south of the city, and just drifts it into the Little Miami River.
And this is the man that your grandmother had the encounter with.
Right. So 2 months before he killed his fifth victim, my grandmother and her sister, they were 6 and 4 at the time, were looking in a candy store. If anybody here from Hamilton, you'll know the area of Hanover and Central Avenue in Hamilton, Ohio. And they're looking at the candy in this store, this little grocery store. Her father works right next door in a butcher shop. And a handsome man comes up to these two girls and says, "I'll give you candy if you follow me into the alley." This is September 1902. Takes him in the alley, promptly knocks the four-year-old unconscious with a blunt instrument, tries to strangle my grandmother. She's fighting him off. He takes a knife, stabs her in the head. She's bleeding profusely. That kind of shocks him because, remember, he strangled his victims. He probably didn't like blood. She runs all of 20 yards to her aunt's house. Her family lived right in the neighborhood. And, of course, they ran back and found the unconscious daughter with her.
So she actually saved her sister, didn't she?
She saved her sister's life, absolutely.
Now, Knapp, in some ways, doesn't sound like your typical murderer. Wasn't he a rather suave, debonair type of guy?
Very strikingly handsome. Very good-looking man. After he kills his third wife, in 1902, he promptly moves to Indianapolis and takes on another fourth wife, who he then claims that in the middle of the night he used to grab her and strangle her but never killed her. And she defends him to the end. This man was a woman's man. He was good-looking, very flamboyant. After he finally confesses to all these murders, he was just media fodder. I mean, the local papers, the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Time-Star would go up and interview him at length at the jail in Butler County. The stories then would run all over the country because he would describe how he would strangle these women. Then he would go into tears when, you know, the victims' families would confront him. Even to the end, just hours before he was electrocuted in Columbus, he takes out an accordion and plays "There'll Be a Hot Time Tonight in the Old Town" for all the visiting reporters. This dude was unreal. Yeah.
He sounds like a very lurid character.
He thought he was going to get off. I mean, he was one of those early cases where he thought he would get off with insanity. They tried different things, and he said to the end, "I will never go to the chair," but he did.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation with Rick Kennedy about his grandmother's encounter with Alfred Knapp, the notorious serial killer, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And the wrong man was accused, and mm-hmm. your grandmother had to feel some responsibility for that, I'm sure. You think that's one of the reasons why she stayed so quiet about this for such a long time?
I think so. Picture a situation. The man she accused was he sold fruits and vegetables from a cart, horse-drawn cart, that would go through the alleys of Hamilton. And the girls knew him well. In fact, a week before her assault, he had bounced him on his leg. He had been a childhood friend of my great-grandfather. He was very actively involved in the local Catholic church, St. Joseph's, which is still there in Hamilton, right there nearby, very well known in town. And during the time of his trial, his father died from the strain. His mother was very ill. There was clearly public sympathy for him. Even the Hamilton police admitted to the press that when they brought bloodhounds in from the Dayton Police Department, that the bloodhounds didn't find his, they didn't find his doorstep, that they led the dogs to his doorstep. So he was a bit framed. It's kind of astounding that they actually held the case in the first place, because by the time the trial started, there was nobody in town, including the media, that believed that this Joseph Roth was the true assailant on my grandmother.
And in the case of Alfred Knapp, some of the cases, and particularly in Cincinnati, they were almost cold case crimes at one point. The police had given up on trying to figure out who had done this, hadn't they?
He killed, like I say, two young women and a young girl. Two of the women that were killed, inexplicably, the policeman wrote it down as suicide. Now, how do you commit suicide? Will you strangle yourself and jump in the canal? I mean, but they just wrote them down as suicides, and they were cold cases, for a good 10 years.
Wow. We will continue our conversation with Rick Kennedy after the break, and you can join in by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. And we're talking with Rick Kennedy about his grandmother's escape from a notorious serial killer in Hamilton early in the 20th century. He writes about it in this month's Cincinnati Magazine. The article is called The Devil She Knew. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rick, when Roth was on trial, that had to be a really tough time for your family and for your grandmother. I mean, she actually had to testify in this. The man who actually attacked her shows up as a defense witness. That had to be just grueling.
Oh, the whole thing was so flamboyant. Yeah, she was forced to show the jury the scar on her head. She's all of 6 years old. She had to walk down and touch on the shoulder of the accuser, Joseph Roth, who, of course, was the wrong man. And then while this is occurring, Alfred Knapp, the serial killer, is in prison saying, I could help that guy. I think he's innocent. So they bring him onto the stand. And one of the things they ask him, which is very eerie, is they try to challenge him. They said, didn't you pose as a Hamilton detective and visit the Motzer family? My grandmother was Stella Motzer. Didn't you visit that family shortly after the assault of the young girls? Which he probably did. This guy was really unreal.
He was brazen.
He was very brazen.
That is unreal.
Oh, yeah, he enjoyed the publicity of the whole thing. And, of course, as I say, I think the real lesson to this whole story for me is that there's never one or two victims in any crime, because the impact that it would have on her entire life, and then the impact it would have on her as a mother and raising children, it would go for decades.
So you were talking earlier about the national attention that this case drew, and they really compared this guy to Jack the Ripper?
Yeah, they call him Jack the Ripper. Yeah, because he was very flamboyant, bragging about his murders. He killed, there were probably more. He owned up to killing five women. We knew he assaulted, of course, at least two others. There were other cities where he lived where there were cases that were never solved with young women and young girls. He could have killed more than a dozen. But those are the ones that he kept specific records on that he confessed to.
And from the way you described Knapp, I'll bet he enjoyed the media attention, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he would entertain them with his stories. I mean, he goes this lengthy detail about how he would strangle women, go from behind, and it was just a compulsion he said that he had. All the papers are very taken by how handsome he is. And then after he's electrocuted, a local Columbus funeral home, probably just a publicity stunt, opens the parlor early so the public can visit him, and an estimated 3,000 people in Columbus, white, black, young, and old, would come to visit to see him beautifully dressed up in the coffin. This guy was a major celebrity. I can type in my grandmother, Stella Motzer, into the internet, put next to it Strangler, Alfred Knapp, and I can find any number of newspapers from the LA Times, New York Times, Los Angeles Herald. all the major papers from the turn of the century, the case was that closely covered.
Do you think that the media would treat it the same way today?
Probably not with the same level of hysteria and detail. We think the media is wild today. You should read these articles at that time. I mean, they interviewed fortune tellers who had believed this crime was going to occur. The facts are all wrong. I mean, even the way the Hamilton police quietly talked to the media about what they think the outcome of the trial will be. It was a little more sensationalized, if you can imagine, than also the media covered things much closer. You had all these big, healthy newspapers and radio, but it was this was a newspaper story. It wasn't a radio and television story. It was a newspaper, and this thing was everywhere.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's talk with Richard in Hamilton. Good afternoon, Richard. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. How are you guys today?
Oh, we're doing great. Thank you.
I was on your radio station a couple weeks ago because I've written a book about a Cincinnati murder, about the Edith Klump case, and it just so happens that I have just finished a deal with History Press, and I'm going to have a book on Alfred Knapp come out in the spring.
Wow. Are you as astounded by this type of a really lurid, heinous character running around like I am?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's why I wanted to write this book, because of the media sensation that he was at the time. I think what particularly struck me is the night that they went to Indianapolis to arrest Alfred Knapp in his new wife's house. The policeman left at 10 o'clock from Hamilton. They reached Indianapolis in the middle of the night, dragged Knapp out of his bed at 4 a.m. By the time they could get back to Hamilton, there were several hundred people waiting at the station because the Evening Sun had put out a special morning edition that detailed some of the particulars of the case, and so people were there ready for it. When he stepped off the train, they were waiting for him in Hamilton.
Well, it's very similar. That's interesting you say that, because like with the case with the Joseph Roth case, when Alfred Knapp was to testify, I mean, the newspapers described this very highly choreographed entrance that they had to make with him into the courtroom, and how, you know, these hundreds of throngs of people then followed him all the way back to the jail. You're right. These were, we think, were eerie today. The world was celebrity crazy just as intensely back then.
Richard, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. We got a question from Maria on Facebook. Do you know the name of the candy store that you were talking about earlier?
Well, that one was called it was actually a grocery store in town. It was called the Kuiper Grocery Store. It was right on Central Avenue, right at Central and Washington Street, if you're familiar with the Hamilton area. It's just down the street from St. Joseph's Catholic Church.
Rick, we've got about a minute and a half left to talk here, so let's talk about what happened to your grandmother after all this, and then what was the effect on your family? How did bringing all this to light affect them?
Well, my grandmother would graduate from high school, then graduate from nursing school, and she moved to Springfield, Ohio, and married an Irish Catholic man named, he was my grandfather, and they lived in the Irish Catholic section of Springfield. They raised four kids. My father, the oldest child, Charles Kennedy, who's at Good Sam right now, recovering, and I hope he's doing well, listening to the show.
We wish him well.
And so she was quite the well-known nurse in the neighborhood. As my father said, very few people had college degrees in the neighborhood. But her relationship with her family, the Motzer family, back in Hamilton was strange. She was never very close to her parents. My father remembers visiting and being uncomfortable. As a mother, she was wildly responsible. She had my grandfather became very ill with tuberculosis, and she became the breadwinner of the family and managed the family. But there was a certain lack of affection to her. My dad has said that, you know, there was just a certain lack of nurturing and lovingness to her, though she was absolutely responsible for everything. And so for him, I think this has been good and healing to understand a past that she had held all those years. She died in 1970. I'm so pleased my 90-year-old father could learn, after all these years, a really vital part of his family history.
Rick, thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Appreciate it, Mark. Love coming.
Rick Kennedy, who writes about Alfred Knapp and his grandmother's near-fatal encounter with the serial killer in this month's Cincinnati Magazine. It's called The Devil She Knew.